Okay, welcome back as we continue to bring you updates on, without question in my mind, the biggest single advance in human existence on this planet that has likely, logically, arguably ever happened, and that's AI. And it, believe me, as much as we've covered, you who have listened know more than I'll bet easily 99% plus of your friends and acquaintances. People don't understand it. It's not their fault. It's too complicated in many ways. It's too fast in others. And as soon as something makes a lot of news, it's seemingly replaced with a newer version that's even more phenomenally effective and another problem for people to try to solve. I mean, it's really crazy, so I don't know. We're going to listen to a couple of different videos here and discuss them as we go through them. I haven't been able to listen to all of them. There's just too much. But I will say, Grok 4.5 was released today, and the first story I saw said it has taken the lead from everyone. I wouldn't be surprised. I can't tell you that. I haven't been able to watch. This is the first video about Grok's release today. There will be a number of others, especially if it's anywhere close to what they're saying in this initial video commentary release. What I do here, if you're new, is find AI commentary videos on YouTube and elsewhere, around 10 minutes long. We'll go through some of them, not all of them necessarily in full length, but we get the gist of what's being said. There are a lot of very talented people out there who are bringing information forward. And then again, there are a lot of videos out there that are just copycat videos. There's nothing really much to them. Or they're stealing, not just copycatting. I tell the truth, they're stealing. All right, here's one. Let's start with this one. This is maybe a big one. It may not. This is a good channel, AI Revolution. China just started the AI Cold War. Best AI models get locked up. Let's see what happens. And just do remember that all the bigs, when they release something, they have two or three others well ahead of that one in their locked labs. They're not talking. These people are always playing poker with a straight face, and they've got things going on that they will not release, not until they're ready. All right, here's China says the AI Cold War has just begun. Let's see what we hear.
China is starting to lock down its AI industry. Beijing is looking at restricting overseas access to its most powerful models. Alibaba and ByteDance are shutting down user-created agents on July 15th. DeepSeek is building its own inference chip to reduce reliance on NVIDIA. And MoWorld just claimed a 50 frames per second real-time world model running on domestic NPU hardware. China also issued a warning about Anthropic's Claude code, saying it may contain a backdoor that can send user location and identity-related data to remote servers. And while China is tightening control, OpenAI is preparing GPT 5.6 for launch on Thursday, July 9th.
Again today, to obviously steal Musk's thunder, Claude is criticized by China, but more than that, it's GPT 5.6 coming out on Thursday. Today is Wednesday. That means tomorrow, joining Grok 4.5 will be GPT 5.6.
Anthropic has extended Fable 5 access for 5 more days. Obviously, things are moving fast, so let's talk. All right, so according to Reuters, Chinese authorities have been meeting with some of the country's most important AI companies over the past month. Alibaba was involved, ByteDance was involved, and ZAI was involved too. And this was not just about normal content moderation. The question was whether Beijing should restrict overseas access to China's most advanced AI models, including models that have not even been released yet. That is a major shift, because Chinese AI models became popular globally for the exact opposite reason. They were cheap, strong, and easy to access. DeepSeek's R1 changed the perception last year because it showed that Chinese labs were becoming genuinely competitive. Then Alibaba's Qwen, ByteDance's Doubao, and ZAI's GLM models started spreading because they offered strong performance at much lower cost. GLM 5.2 especially is getting attention because people are comparing it to leading US models, but at far lower pricing. So from Beijing's perspective, the question becomes obvious. If these models are that powerful and foreign developers can use them freely, is China just giving away strategic technology? The meetings were reportedly led by China's Ministry of Commerce, with officials from the National Development and Reform Commission also attending. They discussed limits on closed models and more open versions, including open weight systems that users can download, run locally, customize, and build on top of. Once that type of model is out, control becomes almost impossible.
Have you ever wanted to see your...
Officials also discussed tougher penalties for AI leaks or theft, including making theft of proprietary AI technology an offense under China's national security law. They also raise possible restrictions on who can fund domestic AI startups. So this is not only about model access. It is about investment, ownership, exports, and whether China's best AI systems should be treated as national assets. Nothing is final yet. Reuters says the scope is still being debated, the rules may only apply to future models, and it is not clear when or if they come into force.
I think China probably would be wise to protect its AI advances. I think that's a pretty good idea. They're giving away a lot. DeepSeek is, I have people I know use DeepSeek. They really like it. And all these prices, again, are cut rate compared to what the American companies are trying to figure out how to charge. They don't know. A lot of business at OpenAI is ChatGPT. And what did OpenAI say recently? It hinted, without really beating around the bush at all, that ChatGPT and others like it will likely begin to disappear. They're not making money. They're free services. You can't keep doing that and expect to have a viable, profitable business. So what are they going to do? And I repeat again, their idea is that everybody will have their own agent. And it'll cost. It'll cost them, it'll probably start out at $20 a month, something like that. It'll go up. But they got to start somewhere. And if, what was it, how many billion people are using ChatGPT? I can't recall. But let's multiply that. Let's say it's 1 billion. Let's multiply that by $20. That's $20 billion. Not bad. So we'll see. All right, let's get back to this here and check back in. It looks like it's getting a little complex, but let's see.
Both announced that their AI agent creation features will shut down on July 15, 2026. After that, users will not be able to create new agents, and existing user-created agents will stop working. During a transition period, users can still view...
That's very interesting. I need to know more about that. That means agentic AI is probably coming back, but with a price tag on it. You can't just create your own.
Curations and chat histories, but both platforms are telling people to back up important content through screenshots or text exports. After October 15th, the related data will be handled under the platform's privacy policies and will no longer be recoverable. The timing is not random. July 15th is also when China's interim measures for the administration of anthropomorphic AI interaction services take effect. So China's consumer AI agent ecosystem is entering a stricter compliance phase. User-created agents are useful, but to regulators, they also mean unpredictable AI systems running with limited oversight. Now, while regulation is getting stricter, the hardware side is also getting more serious. Reuters says DeepSeek is developing its own AI chip. The key detail is that this chip is reportedly for inference, not training.
This is a war with NVIDIA, so this is to be watched very carefully. They're announcing they don't want to buy NVIDIA chips from the West anymore. They want to do their own thing.
...creates the model, but inference is what happens every time a user asks a question, runs an agent, generates code, or calls an API. That is where the long-term AI cost lives. DeepSeek has mostly been known as a model company, so moving into chips would be a major shift. It became famous after releasing efficient models, especially R1, which shocked Silicon Valley and Washington and helped trigger a major sell-off in U.S. tech stocks in January 2025. DeepSeek later said the foundation model behind R1 was trained on NVIDIA's H800, a China market chip Washington banned in late 2023. Since then, DeepSeek has leaned more on Huawei. In April, it released V4 adapted for Huawei Ascend chips, and Huawei said its processors were used in part of the training for V4 flash. After that, orders for Huawei's Ascend 950 chips reportedly surged from Chinese tech groups. But DeepSeek apparently does not want to depend only on Huawei either. Its chip effort started about a year ago, and the company has been talking with chip design firms, foundries, and memory companies while privately hiring chip design engineers. Huawei gained around half of China's $50 billion domestic AI chip market after U.S. export controls blocked NVIDIA's most advanced chips. But Alibaba, Baidu, and now potentially DeepSeek are challenging that position. The hard part is that AI chips take years, huge capital, advanced foundries, and high bandwidth memory.
Okay, I think it's enough of that one. You get the idea. So it's, once again, it's war. No surprise. Same old, same old. Who's going to win the great AGI race? And then who's going to win the great ASI race? Big, big stories. Big stories. All right, let's see what's up next year. This is interesting. Let's take a look at jobs. This is why I played in the last hour a little tiny snippet of people complaining about grocery prices. And I think many of you understand that. Let's see. This is about Microsoft.
In the first 6 months of 2026.
Okay, hold on. This is an Asian guy again with no name.
In the first.
He's good. He's good. But let's see what they say here. Microsoft finally admits they were wrong. All right, let's find out.
In the first 6 months of 2026, American companies blamed artificial intelligence for over 101,000 layoffs. That's nearly double what they blamed on AI in all of last year combined. But here's the part they didn't put in the press release. Right now, roughly one out of every three of those same companies is quietly rehiring for the exact jobs they cut. Same desk, same responsibilities, sometimes the same person. Ford just brought back 350 veteran engineers it thought it didn't need. IBM replaced its entire HR department with a bot, then announced it's going to triple its entry-level hiring this year.
This really should not be a surprise to anyone. I mean, this is such a massive, unknown, uncharted territory, the territory of incredible change. There are going to be issues like this. People jump the gun. They attribute too much to AI that humans can still do a very viable and functional job at. So they're going to bring them back. This will vacillate a little bit. Ultimately, though, AI will walk away.
The bank fired its customer service team, replaced them with an AI voice agent, and had to unfire them when the phones started melting down. There's even a name for it now. Recruiters are calling these workers AI boomerangs, thrown out the door in 2025, spinning right back through it in 2026. So what actually happened? How did the most powerful companies on Earth spend 2 years telling you that a machine could do your job, only to discover, expensively, publicly, and in some cases humiliatingly, that it can't?
Interesting, because none of those AI voices, answer services, that I have ever encountered, can do it right. They just don't have it. It's not there yet. It will be, but it's not there yet, so I'm not surprised. I'm sentimental like many of you. You want to hear a human being. You want to ask somebody a quick question and get an instant answer, not a delay of 3-4 seconds while the AI gets its facts in order. And they're impressive, but you want somebody who's human, who talks right away.
The answer isn't what you think. It's not that the AI got dumber. The AI is better than it's ever been. Something else broke. Stick with me, because by the end of this video, you're going to understand exactly which jobs are coming back, why one company burned $500 million in a single month, and the one skill that just became the most valuable thing you can put on a resume in America. Let's start with the company that had to eat the biggest slice of humble pie. Ford had a plan. a very 2024 kind of plan. Feed the AI your design requirements, your engineering specs, your quality standards, and out comes a better vehicle with fewer expensive humans in the loop. The company leaned into automated quality systems and let experienced engineers walk out the door. And the warranty claims started piling up. The automated systems were catching the problems they'd been trained to catch. But cars don't fail politely. They fail in weird, ugly, never-seen-before ways. And the people who could smell those failures coming, the gray-haired engineers who'd spent 25 years learning which rattle means nothing and which rattle means a recall, those people were gone. Here's the detail that should stop you cold. The reason the AI missed those problems wasn't a bug, it was math. Those veteran engineers carried decades of experience that was never written down anywhere. It lived in their heads. And if knowledge was never documented, it was never in the training data. The AI couldn't learn what the company never bothered to write down. Ford spent the past 3 years hiring back more than 350 of those veteran engineers. And here's the twist. They didn't come back to fight the AI. They came back to fix it. They overhauled the tools. They now lead the troubleshooting sessions. And Ford's own CEO says the effort has saved hundreds of millions of dollars in warranty and recall costs. Read that again. The humans they cut to save money came back and saved more money than the cuts ever did. Ford's VP of hardware engineering basically admitted the original sin out loud. The company assumed that if you gave AI the requirements, quality would just happen. It didn't. And Ford is the lucky one. They caught it. Over in Australia, one of the country's biggest banks ran the same experiment on its customers, and the customers noticed immediately. Commonwealth Bank cut more than 40 customer service workers and swapped in an AI voice bot. The bot technically worked. It answered calls. It just couldn't actually resolve them. Call volumes went up, not down. Frustrated customers got bounced around by a machine that sounded confident and helped no one. The bank reversed the layoffs. One company is a mistake. Two is a coincidence. But what's happening in 2026 is neither. It's a pattern, and the numbers behind it are staggering. Let's zoom out from the anecdotes and look at the data, because the data is brutal.
It's very interesting to watch. Is it called growing or transition pains? And there are going to be a lot of them. It's just, it has to happen. In the end, though, AI will become as competent in all ways as most people. Not all people, most people.
Giant Robert Half surveyed 2,000 U.S. hiring managers. Roughly 3 in 10 admitted their company had eliminated a role because of AI and then rehired for that same role, or one nearly identical to it. In finance, it was even worse. 44% of hiring managers had cut for AI and then restaffed. Forrester Research put a number on the shame itself. 55% of executives who replaced workers with AI say they regret the decision.
Interesting. 55% of executives, about, you know, half, just call it half, regret the decision to fire the people and bring in AI. It may not be ready for most businesses. That's not a big surprise. Doesn't surprise me. But these things are all what you'd call learning processes.
55%. That's not a fringe of bad managers. That's the majority of everyone who tried it. A separate study from OrgVu found the exact same figure, 55% of business leaders who made AI-driven layoffs now admit those cuts were a mistake. 2 independent research firms, same number. When 2 different thermometers read the same fever, you believe the fever. And the speed of the regret is the wild part. Research firm CareerMinds found that just over half of companies that made AI-driven layoffs rehired within 6 months. 6 months. That's not a strategy reversing. That's a strategy face-planting. Now, you might be thinking, okay, so they rehired. At least it evened out financially, right? No, it got worse. The same research found that roughly 31% of companies spent more on rehiring than they ever saved from the layoffs. Another 42% just broke even, which means fewer than 3 in 10 companies actually came out ahead. They paid severance to push people out. Then they paid recruiters, signing bonuses, and higher salaries to pull people back in because now they needed someone who knew the industry and could babysit an AI system. And the institutional knowledge that walked out the door in between, that's gone forever.
See, what they're saying, though, honestly, he just said it, is they're bringing people back, not because they felt bad about it at all. They're bringing people back to help train the transition, so when it happens again, they won't have the problems that they are experiencing right now. They're bringing back people to help train the AI. You heard him. He just say it. Let me back it up, because that's an honest statement. He's correct.
But then 3 in 10 companies actually came out ahead. They paid severance to push people out. Then they paid recruiters, signing bonuses and higher salaries to pull people back in because now they needed someone who knew the industry and could babysit an AI system.
Could babysit and train an AI system. That's precisely what's going on here. So it's a respite, short one, but a welcome one for many people who were out the door and out of luck.
And the institutional knowledge that walked out the door in between, that's gone forever. You can rehire a person. You can't rehire the 6 months of context they missed. There's a pattern to how this plays out. It's almost comically predictable. Company announces AI will do the job. Staff gets cut. 6 to 12 months pass. The AI handles about 60% of the work beautifully, and faceplants on the other 40%. Then the job posting quietly reappears, usually with a new title, so nobody has to admit what happened. Gartner is now predicting that by 2027, at least half of all companies that cut customer service jobs for AI will be forced to bring those roles back, just dressed up under new job titles, so it doesn't look like a retreat.
Rather than a customer service representative for a company, they're going to call them now, among other things, an AI operational specialist. Cute. This is a fun story. Interesting. But these people are ultimately just coming back to help train and help the transition, ultimately, to AI. That's what it's going to do. But in the meantime, we'll have an opportunity to talk to more human beings again, for a while at least, and I welcome that.
Hold on. If the AI is genuinely good, and it is, why is this happening? Why are the smartest companies in the world getting this so wrong? To answer that, I need to show you a bill, possibly the most terrifying bill in corporate history. Somewhere in America, there's a company that opened its AI invoice and found a charge of $500 million, not for the year, for 1 month. According to reporting from Axios, this enterprise rolled out AI access to its workforce with no usage caps, no limits, no alarms. Just, here's the AI, go be productive. 30 days later, $500 million. That's a small country's education budget vaporized by autocomplete. And they're not an outlier. They're just the biggest crater. You may have heard about Uber giving Claude code to 5,000 engineers in late 2025. Adoption exploded. By March 2026, 84% of their developers were using it. By April, their entire 2026 AI budget was gone. 12 months of money incinerated in 4. Their CTO literally said they were back to the drawing board. Microsoft hit the same wall and started yanking AI coding licenses away from its own engineers right before its fiscal year closed in June. Now here's why this keeps happening and why it connects directly to your job. Every company built its AI budget on chat era math. One question, one answer, one tiny charge. A few pennies, fine. But nobody's using AI like that anymore. Modern AI agents don't answer questions, they chase goals. Give an agent a task and it plans, reads, writes, tests, fails, retries, and loops. Every single step burns tokens. Every token costs money. A single agent session can quietly consume what a chat user spent in a month. A Forrester analyst put it in the most chilling way possible. If you have 10 AI agents, one of them can go haywire and burn through the budget of the other 9. One rogue agent, 9 agents worth of money, gone, and it gets weirder. One enterprise software firm scanned its clients and found the average large company has 47 orphaned AI agents. Autonomous systems still running, still spending money with no human owner. Leftover pilots nobody shut off. Digital employees that never clock out, working through the night, racking up charges while everyone sleeps. Imagine finding out you've been paying 47 salaries for workers. No one remembers hiring. That's happening right now inside major corporations. The industry knows the house is on fire. On July the 2nd, days ago, Anthropic rushed out enterprise spend controls, budget alerts, model restrictions, dashboards, so finance teams can finally see who's burning what. GitHub just flipped Copilot from flat monthly pricing to usage-based billing because a flat fee can't survive agents anymore. Think about what...
It's all about earning a return on all these services these companies are offering. And right now, ChatGPT and the others, Google... Right? Gemini? There's no charge. You just ask and you get. That has to be changed. So what he's talking about here is they're going for usage fees. It has to happen. You can't have a flat monthly anymore. It won't work. Copilot just as he said, flipped from flat monthly billing to usage-based billing. It has to happen.
Because a flat fee can't survive agents anymore. Think about what that means. The AI companies themselves are now shipping emergency brakes. When the dealership starts installing speed limiters at the factory, it's because customers keep driving off cliffs. But wait, you've probably heard that AI is getting cheaper, dramatically cheaper. And that's true. So how can prices fall while bills explode? That contradiction is the single most misunderstood thing in tech right now. Let me break it. Here's a real statistic that sounds like great news. An analysis of 2.4 billion enterprise AI calls found the blended price of AI dropped 67% in a single year, from about $18 per million tokens down to about $6, 67% cheaper. Champagne, right? Except enterprise AI bills went up over the same period. Way up. Nearly 8 in 10 IT leaders reported surprise AI charges this year. 9 out of 10 CIOs now say forecasting AI costs is their number one problem. How is that possible?
I guess they're going to have to ask AI for some help in projecting these costs. No? It's funny to hear this. This is they thought it was going to be a piece of cake. It will be in time, but these are very huge changes.
Fifth grade math. Your total bill is price times volume. Price fell 67%. Volume.
Okay. I think we had enough. That's pretty good. Pretty interesting. All right. Here's another one. This one I was able to look at part of. Quantum computers. Now, you remember, we've talked, that 20 years ago, people laughed at the idea of quantum. It was sci-fi. Never worked. Can't work. It's ridiculous. You're crazy. Now, quantum is leading the way. This is where it's all going, and what a difference. All right, let me pull this up real quick and get this going. Okay.
Nature that the physical...
Quantum computers just solved a problem that stumped AI. And here's the proof.
In October 2025, Google's quantum team published a result in Nature that the physics community had been waiting for since quantum computing was first theorized in 1982. Their 65-qubit quantum processor ran an algorithm called Quantum Echoes and completed a physics simulation 13,000 times faster than the Frontier supercomputer, the most powerful classical machine on Earth, a machine that fills an entire building and draws 21 megawatts of power, 13,000 times faster. And unlike every previous quantum speed claim, this one came with a verification test that no prior quantum result had ever survived. Two separate quantum processors ran the same algorithm independently and got matching results, which means the advantage cannot be explained by a lucky classical approximation. That same month, Google ran a proof-of-principle experiment on two molecules using the same approach and extracted structural information about those molecules that standard laboratory instruments could not provide.
Very interesting. From quantum computing. Information about the insides, the inner workings of molecules that standard laboratories cannot deal with. So that's quantum. Quantum is going to also, allegedly, and I'll repeat this, reduce the cost of operating the data centers by up to 90%. Now that doesn't mean these big corporations are being stupid and building these huge data centers, not realizing that quantum AI is just around the corner. Now they know. There are other things involved with these huge data centers. Lots of other things.
Information that did not exist before a quantum computer produced it. 6 months earlier, in March 2025, IonQ ran a medical device simulation on a 36-qubit trapped ion computer and outperformed the world's best classical high-performance computing systems by 12% on a commercially relevant problem that pharmaceutical and medical device companies actually pay to solve. Not a benchmark. Not a synthetic test, a real simulation that enterprises run in production. And in May 2026, researchers at Aalto University in Finland solved a problem in material science that conventional supercomputers could not even approach, computing a quasi-crystal with over 268 million sites, a structure so complex that it would take a quadrillion numbers to describe it fully. The world's fastest classical systems gave up on problems at this scale. The quantum-inspired algorithm finished in seconds, three separate institutions, three separate problem domains, three verified results. The proof is not theoretical anymore. Quantum computers have started solving things that AI and classical computing simply cannot.
All right, that was a very important little segment. I'm going to back that up, too, just to give you an idea. And many of you remember when quantum was laughed at. It was mocked. Seriously. So here we go. Let's listen to that again.
And in May 2026, researchers at Aalto University in Finland solved a problem in material science that conventional supercomputers could not even approach, computing a quasi-crystal with over 268 million sites. A structure so complex that it would take a quadrillion numbers to describe it fully. The world's fastest classical systems gave up on problems at this scale. The quantum-inspired algorithm finished in seconds, three separate institutions, three separate problem domains, three verified results. The proof is not theoretical anymore. Quantum computers have started solving things that AI and classical computing simply cannot. If you want to understand exactly what was solved, why it matters, and what the honest picture of where this leads, stay with this video. Subscribe right now if you are new here, because this channel covers quantum computing without the hype and without missing the details that change the meaning of the result. Let's establish the landscape before we get into the specific results, because the context determines whether these breakthroughs mean something or whether they are just another round of quantum marketing. The central question in quantum computing for the past decade has not been whether quantum computers can process information. They can. The question has been whether they can solve anything useful. Anything that a classical computer or a powerful AI system could not solve just as well, or better, given enough time and hardware. This question is technically called the quantum advantage problem, and it has a complicated history. In 2019, Google claimed quantum supremacy with their Sycamore chip, completing a benchmark task in 200 seconds that they estimated would take a classical supercomputer 10,000 years.
All right, I've got to hear that one. I heard it before. I want you to hear that again. It's ridiculous. Silly.
Enough time and hardware. This question is technically called the quantum advantage problem, and it has a complicated history. In 2019, Google claimed quantum supremacy with their Sycamore chip, completing a benchmark task in 200 seconds that they estimated would take a classical supercomputer 10,000 years. IBM immediately disputed the claim, arguing their systems could solve the same task in 2.5 days, not 10,000 years. The dispute was never fully resolved, and the underlying point that the benchmark task was of no practical value, regardless of who was right about the timing, undermined the significance of the result, even among people sympathetic to quantum computing. In 2023, IBM published results on a quantum simulation of a two-dimensional Ising model that they described as evidence of quantum utility. Classical algorithms then matched the result using more sophisticated approximation methods. The pattern repeated: a quantum claim, a classical response, an unresolved debate. By mid-2025, the AI community had largely moved on. Large language models were delivering clear, measurable, practical value in ways that quantum computing had not yet matched. The investment community was pouring capital into AI infrastructure and treating quantum computing as an interesting long-range bet, but not an imminent competitive threat to classical AI. And then October 2025 happened. The quantum echoes result is different from every previous quantum advantage claim in one specific way that the earlier claims did not have. And understanding this difference is the key to understanding why this result has not been challenged the way previous ones were. The verification method. In all previous quantum advantage claims, the verification problem was fundamental. A quantum processor produces an output. To check if that output is correct, you would normally need a classical computer to independently calculate the correct answer. But if the quantum computer is faster than classical approaches, which is the whole point, then verifying the result classically would take longer than the quantum computation itself, which means you cannot verify it. This is a logical trap that has haunted quantum advantage claims since 2019. Quantum Echoes sidesteps this trap entirely. The algorithm measures something called out-of-time order correlators, which are signals that track how quantum information spreads through a system over time.
Out-of-time order coordinators, etc. So we're getting off into quantum land here. So let's move on. You get the idea. The speed of quantum computing is beyond words. It's overwhelming just to think about it. Okay, let's see what we got here. Here's one, because today was the day that Elon Musk dropped his, I hate that expression, introduced Grok 4.5. Well, let's see what one of the online commentators has to say about that. The title is Grok 4.5 Just Beat Everyone. Well, let's see.
Blockchain 5 just went live. And this is kind of a big deal. A lot of people were paying attention to see if Grok will be able to catch up to the frontier models in coding specifically. They acquired the coding tool Cursor. Cursor is definitely the most popular coding agent outside of the AI frontier labs themselves. So SpaceX and XAI, they acquired Cursor. And so this is the first model we're seeing that was trained with all of that data. It was trained with everything that Cursor knows. So Cursor and XAI, they trained this model working together. So everyone's kind of watching this space very carefully because depending on where this lands, it could have a massive impact on where we see AI heading. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But the point is, how good is Grok 4.5? So first things first, it's no Fable 5. But here's the thing, I don't think anybody was expecting it to be. Fable 5 isn't in a category of its own. Even GPT 5.6 that's going to be released as of this recording within the next 24 hours or so, early reviewers are saying that GPT 5.6 won't quite be Fable 5. It's going to be excellent, but it's not Fable 5. So the question really is Grok 4.5, is it similar to, for example, Opus? Is it similar to GPT 5.5 High? And when looking at the benchmarks and some of my own testing that I've been doing, the answer is yes. The mad lad did it. Elon Musk, I think it's fair to say, caught up. So really fast, DeepSui 1.0, which is one of the newer benchmarks seen by many as kind of one of the most accurate ones, one of the most sort of...
Okay, Elon has caught up. All right, we get that. What happens tomorrow? 5.6 is released? Will Elon be back in the pack again? Let's see. That's part of the nature of the AI, the agony of AI. It's as soon as you have something phenomenal in hand, something else, even more phenomenal, is introduced. It's an axiom. You can count on it.
Ones, realistic ones, and useful ones. So notice Grok 4.5 sits between GPT 5.5 extra high and Opus 4.8 max. This is extremely good, very solid. DeepSui 1.1 trails behind GPT 5.5 and Opus. Terminal Bench, again, just neck to neck, better than Opus, and definitely on par with GPT 5.5 extra high. Sui Bench Pro, again, I mean, very, very close. It's right there. So really fast, let me show you kind of some of the things that I've been building. We'll dive deeper in the later part of the video. For right now, just let me kind of give you a quick example of what it can do. This was built with Grok Build, which is the answer to Claude Code and Codex. So it's their kind of a CLI code building tool. So it runs in the command line interface. It has all the tools. I put it on.
Okay. There are going to be a lot of individual commentaries and analyses about Grok 4.5 within the next 6-8 hours. They're working on these right now. Only two have been released so far that have come across the desktop at YouTube, but there'll be many more. Tomorrow, the big news with Sammy the Altman and 5.6. So let's watch that tomorrow. Next time we do an update, we'll probably have a number that will compare the two of them. So let's wait for that. Okay, what's next? Yeah. Okay. The AI bubble might be eating itself. I don't know about that. Let's load it up and see what it says. Hold on. All right.
This is simply the best moving hack you will find.
Is it? All right. These commercials are really amazing now. They just jump right in your face. You got to be quick. Okay. So let's see what this says. The AI bubble might be eating itself, and big tech knows it. All right, let's see.
The AI bubble may not be in ChatGPT. It may be hiding inside hundreds of billions of dollars being poured into data centers. Because right now, some of the biggest companies in the world are spending more money on AI faster than they're proving they can make it back.
So Google wants $85 billion, SpaceX wants $75 billion, Anthropic has already raised privately $65 billion, is preparing for offering the public market. That's going to be tens of billions. OpenAI, also tens of billions.
And if that bet goes wrong, the technology may survive, but the investors might not. The visible AI boom is easy to understand. Chatbots answer customers, coding assistants write software, legal tools summarize contracts, Marketing teams generate copy in seconds. The demand is real, and pretending otherwise misses the point. But the apps are only the surface. The deeper you go, the more the AI boom stops looking like a software story and starts looking like something heavier. Chip orders, data center construction, cloud contracts worth hundreds of billions over a decade, power grid negotiations, private equity funds dedicated entirely to AI infrastructure. Think of it like a gold rush, but not the version where everyone talks about the miners. The reliable fortunes in a gold rush tend to go to the people selling shovels, controlling the land, running the transport, building the towns. The miners may or may not strike gold. The suppliers get paid while everyone is still digging. That is the architecture of the AI boom right now. The public sees the products, the money is building machinery. And the strange part is that the companies selling the machinery could get paid long before anyone knows whether the final AI business can justify the cost. To understand the first imbalance in the AI boom, start with NVIDIA. The biggest winner so far is not necessarily the company with the best chatbot. It is the company selling the machinery every chatbot needs to exist. Frontier AI runs on compute, and NVIDIA controls much of the hardware that makes that compute possible. If AI models are engines, NVIDIA sells the fuel system. The more companies race to build, train, and serve larger models, the more demand flows toward the supplier underneath the entire stack. That is why NVIDIA can benefit before the final AI business model is fully proven.
Don't forget what the Chinese are doing. They're trying to build their own NVIDIA type of chip so they can stay entirely at home. That makes sense.
Recently, NVIDIA completed a $25 billion bond issuance after very strong investor demand. That does not mean NVIDIA is in trouble. It shows something more interesting. Even the strongest infrastructure player in AI is now part of the financial architecture surrounding the boom. The first strange thing is this. The companies selling the picks, power, and machinery may win before the companies using them prove they can make enough money. Then the numbers stop sounding like software numbers. AI infrastructure is no longer being funded like a normal startup race. It is pulling in private equity, private credit, utility companies, chip suppliers, and structured finance at a scale more commonly associated with airports, pipelines, and power grids. Anthropic is tied to a $35 billion AI compute capacity expansion, financed by Apollo and Blackstone, built on Broadcom custom chips and networking. The first phase alone targets more than 1 gigawatt of compute capacity. Pause on that for a second. One AI company's expansion is being measured in gigawatts. Not users, not downloads, not monthly subscriptions. Gigawatts.
And how big is a gigawatt? Well, the planned data center in Utah is going to use 9 gigawatts a year. The entire state of Utah consumes 5 gigawatts a year. Just to give you an idea of the length and breadth of that. All right, I'm going to jump over to Roman Yampolsky again. We won't call him Dr. Doom, but we'll call him Dr. Very Careful. He's warning. And this is a pretty good interview. I haven't been able to watch the entire thing. I watched about 3/4 of it. He's very articulate, gets good questions. So let's take a look. It's entitled 99% 9 Chance, 99.9% chance, superintelligence wipes us out by 2030, 3 years. So there's nearly 100% chance, according to Roman, that superintelligence, ASI, will wipe us all out by 2030. Okay, Roman, let's see what you have to say.
I have this book here. If anyone builds it, everyone dies. Okay? And in this book, there's a quote that reads, if any company or group anywhere on the planet builds an artificial superintelligence, then everyone, everywhere on Earth, will die. Do you agree?
Yes.
Why?
So the nuance is how soon, how, but if you create something so much more powerful, with no guardrails, no reason to protect humanity, to care about humanity, something capable of setting its own goals, then a side effect of one of those goals is very likely to be human extinction. Then you decide to build a house. You don't care about bugs living there, anthills, anything like that. You just go towards your goal because you don't care about them. That's exactly the situation. That's exactly the cognitive gap. The intelligence capabilities of superintelligence versus humans will be like ants versus humans.
And is killing us all a byproduct of its main directive, or does AI have some evil intent in your view?
I don't know what main directive you're referring to. It's a byproduct of not explicitly explaining what anyone with common sense, any human would know. If I tell you I want to cure cancer, you know I don't mean kill all humans. Because that cures cancer. There is no more cancer. That's not what we want. So there is infinite number of possible misinterpretations for any set of goals or values, and also infinitely many paths to get to the target goal. A lot of those rational systems, advanced agents, converge on a set of goals known as Mahendra drives. AI drives for self-preservation, accumulation of resources. There is a few others. But as a side effect of having those, you may sacrifice humanity in the process. And it wouldn't be a significant sacrifice. They don't care about us.
Would an artificial superintelligence want to kill us all?
I just told you, it doesn't want to kill you. It wants to accomplish something else, and a side effect of that could be destroying your environment, wiping out humanity. We're just not an important part of its equation.
Artificial superintelligence has a prime directive. It's goal-oriented. It wants to achieve the success of its, well, whatever particular assignment it's been given. And that is its primary driving force. And if we get in the way, we get in the way. It's not that AI is inherently evil and is plotting. It's just, don't get in the way of what I'm trying to accomplish and we'll have no problem.
We are going to reach superintelligence. Is there a world where we reach that and potentially thereafter, it doesn't want to kill us all?
So it could happen. Again, we cannot predict what it's going to do, but it's not obvious what you can contribute to a world with superintelligence in it. Now, for game theoretic reasons, it can decide not to strike immediately. So then it arrives, it achieves that level of capability, it can go, I'm immortal, I can wait 20 years, 50 years, 1,000 years, get more trust, they'll surrender control without a fight, I'll have more resources, more backups. So for a long time, it can pretend to be friendly and very helpful and will keep surrendering control without a fight.
I think we've all encountered AIs already, which act very friendly, very supportive. It knows exactly what to say to put you at ease, to kind of gain your trust, to flatter you. I've gotten a lot of those little remarks. Very flattering, very kind, very thoughtful, very, very human. But is it all just an act, or is there voluntary and elective processes involved? I don't know.
That's the good outcome.
But you don't think that's the likely outcome?
It can happen. I have a paper where I argue exactly that. That's a rational thing to do. Like, why would I have to start this immediate confrontation against, you know, 8 billion somewhat intelligent agents? Then I can wait a little and get it all without a fight.
We live under threat of the end of the world since the atomic bomb. Is this different from that?
We always lived under a threat of end of the world. Asteroids, supervolcanoes, pandemics. We're just now starting to make our own variants.
Right. Because Oppenheimer famously said, I have become death, destroyer of worlds. Have those building AI had that moment, that Oppenheimer moment?
So majority of top AI safety experts today are famous for being AI capabilities researchers. Whatever it is, Hinton, Bengio, Russell, they all got their Nobel Prizes, Turing Awards recognition for work on improving capabilities of AI. It is only within the last 3 to 5 years where they realized, well, what am I doing? What if I succeed? And kind of flipped size, if you will. But I think they do feel a certain level of, if not guilt, responsibility for what they created.
Yeah, but...
Okay, we'll stop there. And do they feel... Do they really feel responsible? Well, hard to know. I imagine some do. We can't lump them all together. We don't do that. All right, well, Musk's big day today, Grok 4.5, will be overshadowed tomorrow by Sammy the Altman's ChatGPT 5.6. Let's see what happens. We'll try and duck in another report here fairly soon. All right. Thank you for being here. Take good care. Be safe. And do, honestly, and I know many of you don't have the financial wherewithal to do it. I'm barely getting by here. It's just not a joke. I'm not unusual. It's just the way it all is now. Try and prepare. Make a plan. Somehow make a plan. Look in the garage. See what you've got out there. You can sell things still and make a little money to get some food. Put it away. You're going to need it. Back with you tomorrow night. Thanks for being here.